Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 16th of December, recording at 4:43 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, I'll do a little quick review of what's actually transpired this week in terms of some of the highlights, and I'll apologize here early on for the gravelly voice and the nasal tones here, a little bit feverish, David Fuller, with a bit of a head cold. Nothing serious, certainly, but you probably notice a difference. And here goes. Review of the week. Well, as far as stock markets are concerned, we've seen a slowdown, hardly surprising, in the very strong gains, rate of gains that we had been seeing really since the October lows. But we've had very little in terms of major pattern deterioration in any of the more important of the world's stock market indices. In terms of government bonds, we've seen a bit steadier action here overall. That's been the case for over a month now, as support was encountered for long-dated government bond prices above the March lows. The U.S. dollar has certainly slipped this week. Has done no favors for the precious metals sector, which had raced upwards, as you know, and then experienced sharp short-term trend-ending signals and has commenced what's likely to be a medium-term consolidation. And oil, while oil chances are still that the oil complex is near a relatively important low, it's making heavy weather of it, suggesting that there isn't going to be any quick spike back up to the highs. Not that that was ever a realistic prospect that we would see the Katrina highs tested anytime quickly. Instead, we're getting a fair amount of ranging, a little below that $60 level. Okay, let's go back to the big themes here overall. And one of the most important ones is liquidity. You read Christopher Wood today talking about the liquidity that we're seeing in Japan. If you read Martin Springs On Target, you'll see some figures cited by Richard Russell regarding the money supply expansion for various different countries over the last 12 months. You've also seen that data on this site. If you saw that data on the site a few weeks ago, and this is really one of the big stories that's been around for quite some time: abundant liquidity lifting global stock markets. Now, as I've said over and over again, we are seeing all this liquidity because countries have been very worried about slipping into a Japanese-style deflationary environment, and that fear has certainly abated somewhat as a result of all this liquidity, but nonetheless, it's been a big factor in recent years. Another very big factor is that no country wants a strong currency. That's why some of the currency moves have been quite pedestrian relative to what we've seen elsewhere in the financial markets. And another major factor here is that the central banks do feel that they can err on the side of inflation because core inflation rates have been kept quite low, partly by the way they actually calculate the stuff. And also a major factor here has been the imported goods from China and other developing countries, which have helped to keep down those core inflation pressures. And of course, wages have been relatively, or wage pressure has been relatively subdued in a good many industries. So again, we have all this liquidity, which is the rising tide that lifts all boats. And we have certainly seen plenty of that, and we've seen a number of articles saying that now, wait a minute, the liquidity is contracting, and we're going to see major shakeouts accordingly. Well, I see no evidence really that the liquidity is contracting very much. I think that's unlikely to be the case anytime soon. The next question we have to ask is, are markets going to get so ahead of themselves that they fall of their own weight, just as we've seen with an unwind of speculative positions in precious metals recently? Well, more on that in a moment. But if we take the equities first among the asset classes, the two big themes that I've been running for 2.5, 3 years now, closer on to 3 years, and that is the supply inelasticity theme, which really centers on the natural resources. And the other big theme has been emerging markets, which generally, when you get a valuation contraction type of bearish environment, and we've seen a lot of valuation contraction in Wall Street over the last 2-3 years, not least this year, that tends to create an environment where you get underperformance by Wall Street and other developed country markets relative to the sort of moves that we see in emerging markets, which have had explosive rises over the last three years, pretty well the whole emerging market sector. So that's been a hugely important theme. And then there's been a secondary theme, and that is that a couple of industrially based stock markets, important stock markets, that had been in secular valuation contraction bear markets for many, many years, broke out of those patterns not all that long ago, and completed base formations. And of course, that's Japan and South Korea. So those are the areas that have interested me the most among stock markets. And I think by and large, that's not going to change a great deal going forward. And I should repeat, particularly for new investors, that my favorite stock market of all for the long term remains India, which is such an interesting choice. But now, if we listen to the financial television programs and you hear strategists talking, they are always interested in a number of different rotational themes. And one that I heard this morning was the view that, that after extremely good run, that we were going to see money moving away from mining and other resources, and that they actually favored, the one most favored, and this, there's a little bit of a Buggins turn aspect to this. In other words, what hasn't moved yet, and singling out technology. Well, technology's performed quite respectably since those October lows after a very, very long period of underperformance, and with all the liquidity sloshing around the system, and with all the fund managers out there in search of short-term performance, we certainly can expect plenty of rotation among sectors, producing some short-term and sometimes reasonably sharp relative performances in whatever sectors are being temporarily abandoned and or temporarily invested in. But I think that the big themes that I've mentioned, the supply inelasticity, the emerging markets, Japan, South Korea, in my view, I see no evidence that these big themes are going to go away, although they're all subject to medium-term consolidations from time to time. We're seeing a medium-term consolidation, for instance, in some of the energy sectors, but particularly related to oil. Now, that's all part and parcel of the business, but I think that these long-term themes are likely to run and run. And from my own personal portfolio perspective, I have really no intention, certainly at this stage, and I doubt that I will for quite some time have any intention of reducing my most important core positions. And energy is right up there at the top of the industrial resources area, although I certainly like big diversified mining companies. I like those a great deal. Companies such as Rio Tinto and Billiton. I like underperformers that have a near global monopoly, at least in the free world, such as Inco, which is really quite quiet here right now, and I'm looking for an improving nickel price after a consolidation of nearly 2 years. So these positions, say I have no intention at this stage of disturbing in my portfolio. And in other words, I'm not going to reduce my weighting in these areas, nor am I going to reduce my weighting in India. If there's any one market around the globe that I want to increase my weighting in, and hopefully to be able to do it at an advantageous time, or I may just pay upwards for it, is going to be India. Now, what concerns me most is what none of us can be certain about, but is my thoughts about a cyclical related to the US election cycle correction on Wall Street that would be bigger next year than anything that we've seen, certainly since the March 2003 low. Now, there's no reason why that has to happen for absolutely certain. There's nothing that's absolutely certain, of course, in markets. That's part of the appeal and also part of the concern. But historically, as I've described it before, that the first 2 years of a presidential cycle, a new presidential cycle, and that's 2005 and 2006, that's when the Fed and to a lesser extent the administration are cleaning out the Augean stables, as it were, correcting some of the excesses of previous monetary policies. They usually get that out of the way partway through the second year of the presidential cycle, and then start gearing up again for the latter 2 years. So historically, the worst performing year in the U.S. presidential cycle has been the second year, and that would be 2006. And given the gains that we have seen and a rally, if we go back to that March 2003 date, that will be celebrating a 3 year anniversary if it carries on through the end of February, and it might just well might do that. That will leave markets susceptible to that medium term correction. Now, am I going to lose sleep at night worrying about that at this stage? No, not at all. Am I going to take an axe to my portfolio positions in anticipation of that? No, not at this stage. But I want to be alert to these possible risks, and I don't want to be blindsided by any sort of significant medium-term correction in a year that historically underperforms. I mean, for obvious reasons, I want to be alert to the possibility that that could. That could repeat in 2006. If it doesn't happen, why might it not happen? Well, I'd point the finger at liquidity first and foremost. Now, what else should I mention here? I don't want to make this audio too long overall, but The US leash effect, I just want to say a little bit more about that, particularly new subscribers coming in all the time. Currently, Wall Street is showing a pretty good relative performance, having underperformed for so much of the year. A lot of people are now saying, again, there's a Buggins turn aspect to this. In other words, it has underperformed for such a long time, and a number of fundamental analysts can say, look, you've had very modest gains in stock markets, but across the boards in the US, the figure they're throwing around is that corporate profits have improved by 70% in 2005, and they're saying that the market is much less overvalued than it was, and so a lot of that cyclical phase of valuation contraction that I've been talking about for such a long time, a lot of that valuation contraction has occurred. So there's no doubt about it that Wall Street is less overvalued vis-a-vis other stock markets. And the flip side of that, for those who are moving more money into Wall Street, is they can now say that Wall Street is more competitive than it was previously, and justify some of that buying. Well, what really concerns me is just how well is Wall Street performing, and it's performing very well at the moment. And if that, as long as that continues, then I'm relatively relaxed about what happens in other stock markets. And right now, here today, I see nothing to suggest that this rally won't carry on into the first quarter of 2006, or at least that markets won't remain. Stock markets won't remain quite steady for that period. But at some point, whether it's when I expect it in, say, as we move into the latter part of the first quarter of 2006 and beyond, at some point, if we do get that sharp cyclical downturn on Wall Street, then I think we will see the leash effect drag down all other stock markets in the process. That's always happened before. And why shouldn't it repeat again this time, especially when, if we look at the markets that we like so much that have been so fashionable, take Japan, take India, well, who've been among the major buyers of those markets? Investment money coming from North America, investment money coming from Europe. And Europe has pretty well always been a high beta version of what we've seen on Wall Street. So if North America takes fright and then investors in Europe become more cautious as a consequence, and if we get more than a little the 2-3 week wonder shakeout, but we get a bigger medium-term correction in those markets, then it's hardly surprising that investors will turn more cautious and they will grab some of the very good profits that they have in Japan, that they have in emerging markets, and that we would see them all move down. Now, that's the that's the risk, and there's a silver lining though to this cloud, because that would create almost certainly an exceptionally good buying opportunity. A sharp shakeout in stock markets would halt the increases that we're seeing in short-term interest rates. It might well trigger some partial reversals of the interest rate hikes that we've actually seen. It would encourage even more generous amounts of liquidity on the part of central banks. And again, another part of that silver lining is that the third year of a US presidential cycle has historically been the most bullish overall. So, well, I think the odds are fairly high, certainly well over a 50% chance that we see a bigger correction in 2006 than we have seen in recent, in the last 3 years. That that would, as I say, create another really very, very good buying opportunity. And if first let's get there, and then we can decide on where the best buying opportunities are, but I wouldn't be at least surprised if they weren't in some of the areas that we've liked so much in the last 2 to 3 years. Okay, what about the government bonds? Well, this is a sector that I do not like. I think that for government bonds to see A significant rally would require what I've just the extreme version of the correction that I've just been talking about, but it would be a rally back up within what is clearly, to me at any rate, a developing top formation in government bond prices, and it's looked like that really since we saw the type 1, type 2 ending, in other words, the acceleration up to highs and in June 2003, and the very sharp type 2, as taught at the chart seminar, reaction against that upward trend, and everything else has been sort of a right-hand extension. Top formation development in long-dated government bond prices, bottom formation development in the yields for those same bonds. Now, therefore, I'm really not interested in bonds from an investment standpoint. I am, however, occasionally interested in them from a trading standpoint, which I want to play on the short side. Not in here today, not at these levels, because they have steadied up, not surprisingly, near or above the important March reaction lows, and we could easily see a short covering rally, a little bit of opportunistic buying in here. And a little bit more buying as and when we get the stock market correction. But I don't like the sector. Again, I've mentioned over and over again, look at the 50-year bonds that countries are issuing. Look at the size of the government debt that's around. Look at all the money creation that's taking place and the inflationary implications of that. Read Christopher Wood on this subject here today in the Greed and Fear that's being posted. And that's not a good story for bonds. And therefore, I say I'm only really interested in playing those long-dated government bonds from the short side after they've seen a good technical rally within what are gradually developing overall downward trends, or will be once these top formation developments are completed. So, to summarize on that, I'll wait to see rallies, and when those rallies tire, those will be the opportunities to sell short, and I'll hope to spot those. Owen and I will hope to spot those opportunities for you, and to take advantage ourselves and be able to point them out to any like-minded subscribers. Now, moving on into the currencies. Interest rates, rising interest rates in the U.S. have been the key prop underneath the dollar. I've said over and over again that interest rate differentials are the only really hard fundamental. And interest rate differentials are what have been behind the yen's persistent weakness up until this week. We've seen quite a good rally in the yen. I don't think that's so much as buying as short covering. But the interest rate story for the U.S. dollar may well be in its last legs. Now, a lot depends on whether you think the central bank's going to wrap up the interest rate increases at 4.5 or go on to 5, and let alone 5.5, as some people are forecasting for 2006. I don't know. No one actually knows. I don't think the central banks actually know. But my guess is, and it can only be a seat of the pants guess, is that we're fairly close to the high, another 25, maybe 50 basis points, and then a pause. Now, certainly a widespread perception that the U.S. interest rate cycle has peaked, let alone any kind of justification for a lowering of U.S. short-term interest rates, and I think that really would cause the dollar to head south, and I think the dollar may well be heading south in anticipation of just such a situation overall. Certainly, the dollar bull run has been looking very tired in here in recent weeks, and I think one of the stories that we will see in 2006 will be a declining dollar overall, if not from the recent highs that we saw last month, then from levels not too far away, in the event that short-term interest rates go somewhat higher in the U.S. than most people or than I'm currently expecting. But I think, again, the risks are now to the downside for the U.S. dollar against most currencies. But we may not see any fireworks. It may be a relatively subdued affair because I think a fair number of people are actually bored with currencies. The perception and understanding that no country wants a strong currency is growing, and that has led to the fashion for alternative currencies. And of course, that brings us right on to precious metals. Precious metals have seen an important correction. It's just a normal punctuation of the overall upward trend within the overall secular, as in very long-term, bull market. We have seen precious metals come back this week to levels that have certainly gone a long way towards correcting that overbought position and made them interesting once again. The only reason I really haven't gone back in here in the last few days and opened up some long positions, once again having had the luck of getting out at pretty good levels as those trends started to accelerate upwards, is because I'm quite interested in having a quieter time over Christmas and New Year's, and making money isn't always the top priority. But bottom line here for those of you who are listening and interested in this sector, is gold around $500 back at an attractive level? Yes. Is silver at 850 or lower back at an attractive level? Yes. And those are my favorites. Well, but I like them all. I certainly like the palladium. The froth has been blown off that market, and I certainly don't think that the platinum bull market overall is over. Industrial metals. How many times have you heard people say sell copper over the last 2 years? Well, that would have been an absolute disaster, and fortunately, Owen and I have never been tempted because we look at the charts and we see where's the problem. And in here today, copper's very, very steady. Overall, the supply and elasticity trades. Actually, that doesn't fully state the case. It's supply and elasticity meets rising demand. That's the story behind the resources. So, I do like the sector, and I do like the shares that produce these mines. Although I've mentioned over and over again that the shares are more speculative than the mines. Why? Well, you can see some of that in the fashion change that people have been talking about recently. They want people to sell mining companies and to buy technology companies. Well, I'll stick with my mining companies, but I know, as we all know, that you get a fashion change like that, whether justified or not, and temporarily you'll see what has been a very strong sector, mining, underperform for a while, and you'll see some short covering and some long demand in a sector that has done very badly for quite some time, such as technology. I'd rather have the mining companies, and I'm not too keen in jumping around in my investment portfolio, and I tend to do my speculative trading primarily in futures as in currencies, as you'll be aware. And in currencies, it'll still be futures. Okay. And lastly, to take the energy sector, I just want to repeat what I mentioned very early on. First, secular bull market that, in terms of crude oil prices, has been undergoing a medium-term correction. But I think if we didn't see the lows at $55 for crude NYME, and I think we probably did, as I've said before, that we're awfully close to it. So in other words, I'm not in the $40 oil brigade here. I don't think we're likely to see as extreme an overreaction as that. And One reason why I think that's the case is I think that global GDP growth will be too strong, and I also think that you'd get a slowing of production from some of the OPEC countries, were oil to look like it was going to start slipping once again. And natural gas, my favorite vehicle, though, looks like it's seen possibly a medium-term peak in here this week, but I'm biased. I'm out of my long positions. I'd love to see it pull back further and create another buying opportunity. Basically, energy prices, same thing that we've been saying about precious metals in these audios, is that when you get a good shakeout, that's a very, very interesting buying opportunity. And I think that's likely to remain the case for really quite some time. Well, thank you for bearing with me during this somewhat strained and nasal and gravelly voiced audio. I'm looking forward to a rest this weekend and some family time, and I wish you a very, very enjoyable weekend as well. All the best. Bye-bye.